KSDP, 8:30 a.m. in Sandpoint. K201DA, 88.1 FM in King Cove. KOLD, 91.9 FM in Cold Bay. KFPS, 88.1 FM in Falls Pass. And KKQA, 88.1 FM in Akutan, Alaska.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. After nearly 50 years in prison, Leonard Peltier is free to go home. He was released Tuesday morning from a federal prison in Florida. Former President Joe Biden commuted the sentence of the indigenous activist last month for his role in a 1975 deadly shootout with FBI agents on the Pine Ridge Reservation in South Dakota. Peltier, an enrolled citizen of the Turtle Mountain Band of Chippewa Indians, will reside on his tribal homelands in North Dakota, serving out the remainder of his sentence in home confinement. The indigenous organization Indian Collective is bringing him back home. In a statement, Peltier said, "Today, I am finally free. They may have imprisoned me, but they never took my spirit." He also thanked his supporters, saying he looks forward to seeing his friends, family, and community. Indian Collective CEO Nick Tilson, in a statement, said, "Peltier never gave up fighting for his freedom, so they never gave up fighting for him." Many see Peltier as a symbol of racism and oppression against Native Americans by the justice system. While the move to free Peltier has drawn applause from members of Congress and groups like Amnesty International, it has been opposed by law enforcement officials. On Wednesday, Indian Collective is hosting an event to celebrate his return home and a community feed in Belcourt, North Dakota. The event will be live streamed. Peltier is 80 years old and is said to be in poor health. The chairman of the Fort Peck, Assiniboine, and Sioux tribes delivered the State of Tribal Nations address to the Montana legislature on Monday. Justin Greyhawk says tribes in the state are healthy, strong, and resilient. He began the speech by highlighting some successes he says lawmakers and the state have supported in Indian country, including a water settlement, economic ventures, and a tax-sharing agreement. Greyhawk says bills tribes have supported are funding for law enforcement, addressing missing and murdered Indigenous people, and expanding Medicaid. He says among issues tribes will continue to advocate for are Indian education, protecting tribal hunting and fishing rights, and bringing back bison to tribal lands. Greyhawk ended his speech by encouraging partnerships with tribes.
This is an important time to come together. It is important to remind ourselves and our surrounding communities that together we are greater than the sum of our parts.
There are 7 reservations and 12 tribes in Montana. Nevada's only sitting Native American legislator has introduced a bill to recognize Indigenous Peoples Day on what she calls the correct day, the second Monday in October. The bill was heard last week, as Alex Gonzalez reports.
Governor Joe Lombardo issued a proclamation designating August 9th as Indigenous Peoples Day in Nevada. But Assemblywoman Shea Backus says it doesn't pay Indigenous communities the recognition or respect they deserve. She says Assembly Bill 144 would align both dates as is celebrated across the nation.
Indigenous Peoples Day isn't just about a day of recognition. It's about placing Indigenous voices at the forefront of decisions that shape the future of the state. It is this deep cultural connection that has shaped the character of the state of Nevada and should be celebrated.
Backus says opponents of the bill see it as an attempt to remove Columbus Day, a federal holiday, from the books. She rejects that notion and says the second Monday in October could instead be shared between both holidays. Republican Assemblyman Richard DeLong questioned the precedent the change of date could be setting for the state.
Under state law, there are no overlaps. This would be the first time that the state ever decides to have a period of observance that you have two of them coinciding on the same day. So in that sense, this is unique and different.
But backers of the bill say banks and other establishments already recognize the October date both as Indigenous Peoples Day and Columbus Day and see the bill as a formality to codify the joint recognition into law. I'm Alex Gonzalez reporting.
And I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced by Kawanak Broadcast Corporation with funding by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting.
Support by the American Indian College Fund, providing millions of dollars of scholarships to Native students every year. Applications are accepted through May 31st at collegefund.org or by phone at 800-766-FUND.
See Renewal's expertise in energy, housing, land use, fire protection, and more in multi-jurisdictional environments helps tribes leverage existing assets, grow capacity, and gain competitive advantage. See Renewal supports this show. SEERenewal.com.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Network.
The only way to get that under control is to trim government back to a rational size and reduce some of the spending. And that is what is happening.
Congressman Nick Begich addresses some questions from constituents about the federal shakeup. From Alaska Public Media, this is Statewide News on Alaska News Nightly for Tuesday, February 18th. Good evening, I'm Casey Grove. Also tonight, rising egg costs force Anchorage businesses to consider alternatives.
We'll use those egg whites for other things. It's such a large amount of eggs. We just kind of thought, like, can we cut this down at all?
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
How does Alaska's land fund community services for Alaskans with behavioral health conditions and developmental disabilities? Through the Alaska Mental Health Trust Authority. The Trust Land Office manages 1 million acres of lands to maximize revenue generation, with earnings supporting millions of dollars in trust grant making each year to help improve mental health outcomes for beneficiaries statewide. More at alaskamentalhealthtrust.org. This message sponsored by the Alaska Mental Health Trust.
Alaska Congressman Nick Begich hasn't said much to publicly address constituent concerns as the Trump administration began laying off federal workers and freezing grant funding. But last night, Begich held a call-in town hall meeting, and more than 3,000 people participated. Alaska Public Media Washington correspondent Liz Ruskin reports.
The format of the virtual town hall left Begich and his staffers firmly in control of the microphone.
Tonight, we're going to discuss my work so far in Congress, Alaska's priorities, and most importantly, I'll be taking your questions.
But for many participants, it was an exercise in frustration. The telephonic system didn't work for a lot of people, so they tuned in via Facebook Live where they could write a comment, but they couldn't ask a question directly. To judge by the more than 2,000 comments received, much of the online audience wanted to hear Begich answer challenging questions about the firing of federal workers, freezing grant funds, and what they see as illegal executive overreach. As one Facebook participant asked, quote, when are you going to express your authority to hold the president accountable to the Constitution? Some people were more blunt. The Begich staffer who moderated put the questions in gentle terms.
Congressman, we are getting a lot of engagement on your Facebook page where we are streaming this telephone town hall. We've got a comment here from Shannon Turner. She says, so glad finally cutting government spending. And there are a lot of comments on the Facebook page, but also a lot of phone calls that we've gotten in the office.
Begich acknowledged that thousands of people have called his office about the spending freeze and job losses. He said the administration has to shrink government to bring the national debt down and to control inflation.
The only way to get that under control is to trim government back to a rational size and reduce some of the spending. And that is what is happening.
Begich also encouraged Alaskans to see this as a turning point, a new beginning.
One of the things that's been highlighted by some of the recent actions that we've seen over the last few weeks is just how federally dependent Alaska is. And it's important for us to think about this as an opportunity to diversify our economic base.
Begich had his defenders, but the Facebook comments were mostly critical, especially as the moderator let through questions that some listeners complained were softballs. Those included, how do we contact your office? And what does America First mean to you? Then the moderator put through a man named Joel.
On the line. And Joel, it looks like you've got a question about bipartisanship and working across the aisle. Is that correct?
That's right. Thank you. Thank you, Congressman, for taking our calls and doing this.
Joel quickly shifted to a different topic.
I'm a lifelong Republican, but I am in the majority, I think, with a lot of Americans and a lot of Alaskans that are really concerned that we have an executive branch that is more than willing to push or remove the guardrails that are on the executive branch. And what we need from Congress and from the courts is to play that checks and balances role, not to oppose, obviously.
Joel, it looks like we may have lost your line. If you're still there, Joel? All right, it looks like we may have lost Joel.
The fury arising from the Facebook comments was palpable. One woman wrote, quote, "The first real question, and they lost the line." But Begich did respond to what he heard of Joel's question. He gave a 3-minute discourse on the Constitution and the separation of powers.
And if the Congress or the executive branch steps outside of its constitutionally defined boundaries, the courts step in and realign and say, hey, you're out of bounds.
Trump has said he'll abide by court orders. But he and Vice President J.D. Vance have also suggested that they might not. No one on Begich's telephonic town hall had a chance to ask about that. Reporting from Washington, I'm Liz Ruskin.
State lawmakers are considering a new student loan repayment program to attract former Alaskans to return and serve as teachers and state workers. As Alaska Public Media's Eric Stone reports, it's an effort to address the state's struggle to hire key employees and stem the tide of outmigration.
The program outlined in House Bill 28 would pay off up to $24,000 in student debt for Alaskans who go out of state for college as an incentive to return home to work for the state or as a public school teacher. Juneau Democratic Representative Andy Story is the bill's sponsor.
I want to incentivize and encourage skilled former Alaskans to come back home and work as teachers or state employees. These Alaskans typically have family here and a connection to this place and are more apt to stay long-term than new hires from another state.
Over the past 12 years, roughly 56,000 more Alaskans left the state than arrived. And Story says only about a third of Alaskans who go south for college wind up coming back. Her proposed loan repayment program would also be open to University of Alaska graduates who have lived out of state for at least a year. The repayments would be funded by $1 million from the state's Higher Education Fund each year. The 3-year pilot program could support up to 125 yearly $8,000 grants. The bill had its first hearing on Monday. Terry Fagerstrom testified. She received state student loan assistance under a program active in the 1970s and 80s, and she said it provided an incentive to return home after going to college in the lower 48.
At the end of 5 years, I had a really good job, and I had great benefits. I had established my community, I had friends, I'd purchased a home, and I was vested, and I stayed here. So the way I look at it, for an $11,000 investment, the state of Alaska got a 31-year, very productive, highly educated employee. And I think that's a pretty good return on investment.
The bill is currently in the early stages of the legislative process. It'll have to clear the House Education Committee and the Finance Committee before advancing to a final House vote. Reporting in Juneau, I'm Eric Stone.
Alaska Marine Highway officials say they're struggling to attract and retain workers, especially licensed staff. AMHS Marine Director Craig Tornga told House committees last week that the ferry system has not been able to offer a 7-ship schedule since the pandemic. And when it comes to engineers and deck officers, he says the situation is getting worse, not better.
And the licensed officers, both in the engine room and in the wheelhouse, we're going the wrong direction right now, unfortunately. We're not making as many as we need, and we've, through the retirements and going to the pilots, we've been going the wrong direction.
The marine highway system is nearly 10% short of the minimum number of masters and mates it needs to run a full fleet. Add in a cushion in case crew members get sick, injured, or take leave, and the ferry system is 30% short of its target number of officers. It's a similar story for engineers and lower-ranking deck crew. And even among the deck officers the ferry system does have, Tornga says it is still short 31 officers with full pilotage. That's a qualification for navigating Alaska's tricky tides and rocky shores, and it takes years to obtain. Tornga says the state is working on new ways to help build the ranks of certified pilots. He told lawmakers the Marine Highway is working on a plan that would pay lower-ranking officers a partial salary to do ride-alongs on their way to getting pilotage. But for now, Torenga says the Alaska Marine Highway system is serving as something of a farm system for other maritime employers, like, say, cruise ships, who've hired ferry workers away from the state.
It's just a nature of our market here with the cruise ship growth that where are you going to get them? You know, there's a lot of guys that are qualified with pilotage over at AMHS.
Torenga says pay and working conditions are major struggles in recruiting and retention. For one example, he says masters working for Washington's state ferry system can earn a full 25% more than they can in Alaska, and unlike their Alaska colleagues, they can go home to their families every night. Torenga also told lawmakers the ferry system would not run its popular cross-Gulf route between South Central and Southeast Alaska this summer. That's because the ferry Kennecott is in layup for upgrades. Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, Iron Dog racers begin arriving in Nome.
And it's a good feeling when you do, when you come crest the hill at safety and you see the town, it's like, yeah, baby.
That's ahead. Stay with us.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
Talk one-on-one with experts on mental health, nutrition, pharmacology, surgery, childcare, and much more on Line One, your health connection. Join our hosts as they discuss the health topics that matter to Alaskans with their guests and live callers. Email questions before, during, or after the live broadcast to lineone@alaskapublic.org. That's Line One, your health connection, weekly on your local public radio station.
The Alaska Aerospace Corporation is suing an aviation insurance group for the roughly $3 million it spent cleaning up damages at the Pacific Spaceport Complex, Alaska, on Kodiak Island last year. That's according to federal court documents filed with the U.S. District Court of Alaska last week. KMXT's Davis Hovey has more.
Last summer, California-based ABL Space Systems was doing a test on its RS-1 rocket at the state-owned spaceport near Narrow Cape on Kodiak Island. The ground test was in preparation for an upcoming rocket launch, but a static fire damaged the rocket beyond repair. That also caused 1,800 gallons of aviation fuel and other contaminants to spill at the spaceport, according to the Alaska Department of Environmental Conservation. Alaska Aerospace Corporation is responsible for cleanup, the department says, and that process is still ongoing. Alaska Aerospace said in its lawsuit filed in federal court Thursday that the cost to repair the damages and cleanup at the spaceport had reached at least $3.1 million. The corporation claims ABL Space Systems was required to carry insurance that covered the spaceport and had a policy for up to $50 million through the U.S. Aircraft Insurance Group, or USAIG, to cover the damages. But after sending three emails to USAIG asking for a copy of its policy and status on a filed claim, which allegedly existed but was never confirmed by the insurance group, Alaska Aerospace's lawyer sent a final email last month. The CEO of Alaska Aerospace, John Obers, said via email that, quote, it has taken far too long to close out these claims, but also is not uncommon in the insurance industry, end quote. Obers said the corporation filed the lawsuit to expedite the recovery of environmental remediation costs. The lawsuit names the U.S. Aviation Underwriters, Inc. and its managing entity, the U.S. Aircraft Insurance Group. A summons has been issued in the case, but a court date has not yet been set to hear the case. Reporting in Kodiak, I'm Davis Hovey.
A company eyeing Cook Inlet for a tidal energy project expects to hear in the next 5 months whether it's getting roughly $30 million for its efforts. For years, Maine-based Ocean Renewable Power Company has had its eyes on the inlet. It has some of the biggest tides in the world and accounts for more than a third of the country's tidal energy resource.
As many of you might know, if you live near the Cook Inlet, there is an incredible resource in the Cook Inlet for tidal energy. Just watching the water go by on any given day, all the locals know it.
That's Eva White, project analyst and community engagement manager of what the company is calling the American Tidal Energy Project. During a webinar, she outlined the work done so far to get the project off the ground, or more aptly, into the water. The company is interested in an area near Nikiski called the East Forelands. It's a natural bottleneck in Cook Inlet where tidal flows are exceptionally strong.
Our big picture is to develop a commercially viable, standalone tidal energy market in Cook Inlet, and we know that that is not going to happen tomorrow. So our first step is to do the American Tidal Energy Project.
That project is a tidal site capable of generating between 1 and 5 megawatts of power to feed into an existing electric grid. White says they're looking at a Homer Electric Association substation that can accommodate 2 megawatts. If the project moves forward, it could meet about 2.5% of the cooperative's energy needs. But there are major hurdles to clear for the project to actually happen. That $30 million the company's hoping for, it's from a competitive federal grant. White says they expect to hear whether they beat out a competing pitch for a Puget Sound tidal energy project by June, and uncertainty over the status of federal grant funding lingers.
A lot of this work that we've been doing is caveated by the fact that we have yet to receive funding for the later stages of the project. We feel really good about the work that we've been doing, and you know, even if we don't get funding, we're going to try and figure out another way.
If the money comes through, the Ocean Renewable Power Company will spend this summer and next taking measurements in Cook Inlet needed for federal and state permits. A deadly strain of bird flu is sweeping the nation. It has killed more than 20 million chickens since October, and that has scrambled the egg market. Alaska Public Media's Ava White has more on how Anchorage businesses are coping with rapidly increasing egg prices along with supply problems.
Harrison Scheib opens a shiny refrigerator in an open space kitchen filled with butter, half and half, and neatly stacked cartons of beige and tan eggs.
So on any given day, we'll have 8 of these full stacks down on the bottom row here. We're just taking what we can get right now.
Scheib is a manager at Fire Island Rustic Bake Shop, an artisan bakery with 2 locations in Anchorage. Between both shops, Fire Island uses up to 3,600 eggs each week. That's enough to give 12 people the average number of eggs they consume in an entire year. The state of the egg economy is forcing Anchorage eateries, like Fire Island, to raise prices and rethink recipes. Shortages have prompted some residents to seek locally grown eggs, but local suppliers are struggling to keep up with demand. The company raised the price of macarons 50 cents because they use a lot of egg whites, and they're planning to swap out a scone flavor because it uses egg curd, a thick like custard spread. Scheib says the bakery has been experimenting with some new recipes.
We've been doing a lot of like recipe testing. Something like our croissant uses a lot of eggs, specifically egg yolk. We'll use those egg whites for other things, but it's such a large amount of eggs. We just kind of thought, like, can we cut this down at all?
The bakery's challah bread normally goes through 2 rounds of egg wash, but Scheib says the first round has been swapped with water. He says high prices are a concern, but he's more concerned about the overall availability of eggs. Fire Island previously sourced eggs through a local farm, but now orders through a wholesale distributor. In December, the average nationwide cost of a dozen large grade A eggs was $4.15, according to the Consumer Price Index, a 65% increase from a year earlier. Egg prices are predicted to increase another 20% in 2025, according to the USDA's food price outlook. Eggs are a staple in Matt Martell's pasta, and he buys several 5 dozen packs at a time. He owns Alaska Pasta Company and sells wholesale fresh pasta to restaurants across the city. He says egg prices just keep rising.
I still have to buy them, which is kind of unfortunate. Right now, the prices have been going up, you know, month after month, week after week, it seems like. And, you know, a couple weeks ago, Costco is $16, and then you go in a week later, and then it's $20. So, I mean, as it's going up, I'm adjusting my prices.
The company raised prices 10 cents per pound of pasta for wholesale customers, and Martell says he'll consider raising prices further to keep up with the cost of eggs. The bird flu outbreak has impacted almost 160 million birds since 2022, according to the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. Like Fire Island, Martell says he's more concerned about the availability of eggs than the price. Eggs add rich flavor to the company's noodles, and not having eggs would completely change his product.
Pasta is traditionally like flour and eggs, and that's what it is, and that's what gives it its flavor. So, I mean, that's always been the product that I want to take to restaurants, to take to markets, to sell to people. So without it, it would just feel incomplete.
Although the illness is stressing some businesses, it's benefiting others by spiking the demand for farm fresh eggs. Carrie Ann Smith owns Bush's Bunches Produce Stand in Palmer. The store sells regional food products like seafood, potatoes, and eggs. Bush's sources from 6 egg producers, but Smith says it's hard to keep eggs on the shelves right now.
Lately, we've been keeping lists of people who want eggs, and then they're almost all pre-sold right now. And then if we do have them on the shelf and people see that, they will buy 4 cartons at a time.
Smith says the business has struggled to keep eggs on the shelves for months. She says her customer base has grown, and it's not uncommon for people to drive from Anchorage or Wasilla to get their hands on local eggs. A dozen large-sized local chicken eggs is $10, about $2 more than the grocery store. Almost a dozen reports of the virus have been made in Alaska since 2022, concentrated in the Matanuska-Susitna borough and one facility in the Bethel region. Almost 1,400 birds have been impacted in the state, according to the CDC. In Anchorage, I'm Ava White.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by
GCI, providing telecommunication services to tribal health organizations and nonprofit rural health providers, enabling telehealth services for Alaskans. More at gci.com/healthcare. You can make a difference in the lives of Alaskans. Every year, hundreds of nonprofits provide warm meals, safe places, and resources to hundreds of thousands of Alaskans. By supporting Alaska's nonprofits when you apply for your PFD, you're giving more opportunity, more hope, more chances. This year, make more possible with the click of a button. Don't forget to give via PicClick Give when you apply for your PFD. This message sponsored by PicClick Give.
The first teams in this year's Iron Dog Snow Machine race made it to Nome today. Two racers leading the field took a surprise spill just miles before the halfway point of the race. KNOM's Ben Townsend has more.
As 12-time Iron Dog racer Bradley George looks down Front Street, he breathes a sigh of relief.
And it's a good feeling when you come and crest the hill at safety and you see the town, it's like, yeah, baby.
While he and his teammate Robbie Shackle fought vicious crosswinds 20 miles east of Nome, George ran into ruts while crossing a bridge near Safety Sound.
I was just staring at the ground trying to keep my carbides on the ice not to run on the asphalt. And I looked up last second and there's like a 4-foot tall drift at a 45 degree angle off to the left. I jammed the brakes, but you're on asphalt so the studs don't do nothing. And I just slid sideways, I hit the drift and it shot me up.
Moments later, he found himself between two boulders. Luckily, George was relatively unscathed. The same couldn't be said for his sled. He destroyed a windshield, headlights, and some other parts.
The thing that sucks is, up until 30 minutes before we pulled in, we didn't have anything to wrench on, and now it looks like we'll probably have a half hour.
Just a half hour back, Team 20 ran into problems of their own. Brian Leslie towed teammate Casey Boylan for the final stretch into Nome after running into problems with an exhaust sensor. Leslie says the team will use the wrench day to rest before the 1,000-mile journey back to Big Lake.
Being in Nome's awesome. You get a few days of rest, you know, that's pretty much what we're really looking forward to. But really get off the sled for a day or two and not have to, you know, get back right back on it.
The teams will also take advantage of the wrench day to repair their sleds and take part in the halfway ceremony, where awards for the casual expedition class that finished in Nome will also take place. Reporting in Nome, I'm Ben Townsend.
In Bristol Bay, cultural traditions have been passed down for thousands of years. At Dillingham Elementary, an after-school program is helping keep traditions alive, giving students hands-on lessons and teaching the meaning behind their heritage. KDLG's Margaret Sutherland joined the students' monthly culture day and has this story.
It's a sunny January afternoon in Dillingham, and about 30 elementary students from kindergarten to fifth grade gather in the cafeteria after school. Monday through Thursday, students enrolled in the 21st Century After School program usually play outside, have a snack, and then a lesson. But today is a little different. It's the program's monthly culture lesson. Last time, students made headdresses from felt and beads and learned the meaning behind including each color and symbol. Today, culture teacher Deanna Beyer is teaching them to carve.
So long ago, our ancestors could not just go to the store and buy stuff, right? Yeah, they had to make it. That's right. Could they go to the store and buy the materials to make it?
They didn't have the money. That's right. Stores weren't.
Couldn't go to the store for anything. So we had to use the things that we have available to us.
Then she pulls a palm-sized, elaborately carved figure out of her pocket.
So here... This person has so much detail. It's got a face. Mm-hmm. It's got texture on the clothes, on the guts.
Culture lessons are just one part of the after-school program, which the school and the nonprofit Alaska's Educational Resource Center, or CERC, put together last school year. Six Dillingham Elementary teachers run the program. CERC provides curriculum and administrative support remotely. 4 days a week, the teachers spend an hour and 45 minutes after school providing additional instruction. The program's 21st Century Community Learning Grant is funded through the U.S. Department of Education. At the moment, federally funded programs face uncertainty across the country after Trump ordered a pause on all grant funding, then rescinded the order. But CERC coordinators say they have been directed to proceed as usual, with no foreseeable stoppages. And Byers culture lessons are a form of social and emotional learning. She says they develop healthy identities and self-awareness.
We use culture, you know, in our everyday lives. But I think the cultural activities are very important to teach the kids who they are. I tell the kids, culture is, it's who you are and where you live and the people around you. And so I think that the cultural activities are important to kids because it connects them to the land and to each other.
Now she's passing on the pride and dedication to the next generation. The students have a choice of either a wolf or a bear figurine made out of soapstone to carve. Soapstone was not traditionally carved in this region, but she explains that's what came in the kid-friendly carving kits ordered online. It's soft and easy to work with. Each workstation has a filer, sandpaper, and a bowl of water to dunk the stone in to control dust. Fourth grader Maverick chose to carve the wolf.
I like how they could run really fast.
They're cool, pretty fast.
And like just howling, they could attract an entire pack.
Owen, who's in third grade, also chose the wolf because of his appreciation for the animal's speed. He delicately carves detail into the wolf's head and tries to match the size of its ears with precise use of his filer.
Yeah, I'm working on this part. This side's a little bigger than this side. That's why I'm trying to get it more like right here. Like a little off from
so. I'm doing the nose.
But Byer says the imperfections are all part of the art. The next culture class at the after-school program is Molly of Denali Musher. On February 27th, the kids will make mushing sleds out of cardboard, just like Molly from the PBS Kids cartoon. Reporting from KDLG in Dillingham, I'm Margaret Sutherland.
That is all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. If you missed any of tonight's stories, we're online at alaskapublic.org and wherever you get your podcasts. We had reports tonight from Liz Ruskin in Washington, D.C., Eric Stone in Juneau, Davis Hovey in Kodiak, Ashlyn O'Hara in Kenai, Ava White in Anchorage, Ben Townsend in Nome, and Margaret Sutherland in Dillingham. Our audio engineer is Chris Hyde, Tim Rocky's our producer, and I'm Casey Grove. Good night.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible by
ConocoPhillips Alaska, building the next generation of Alaska's workforce through investments in education and vocational training. ConocoPhillips Alaska, committed to Alaska for more than 50 years.
The Westmark Fairbanks Hotel and Conference Center, located in downtown Fairbanks with 400 guest rooms and 1,700 square feet of meeting space. Reservations at westmarkhotels.com.
This is Statewide News on Alaska Public Media. Once upon a younger year, when all our shadows disappeared, the animals inside came out to play. Went face to face with all our fears, learned our lessons through the tears, made memories we knew would never fade. One day my father, he told me, son, don't let it slip away. He took me in his arms, I heard him say, when you get older, your wild heart will live for younger days. Think of me if ever you're afraid. He said one day you'll leave this world behind, so live a life you will remember. My father told me when I was just a child, these are the nights to never die. My father told me. Can't put out, carve your name into those shining stars. He said go venture far beyond the shores, don't forsake this life of yours. I'll guide you home no matter where you are. One day my father, he told me, son, don't let it slip away. When I was just a kid, I heard him say, when you get older, your wild heart will live for younger days. Think of me if ever you're afraid. He said one day behind, so live a life you will remember. My father told me when I was just a child, these are the nights to never die. My father told me.
level of society. It was an experiment in psychogeography.
something just between you and me. When I hear your voice, I know I'm finally free. Every single word is perfect as it can be. And I need you here with me. When you lift me up, I know that I'll never fall. I can speak to you by saying nothing at all. Every single time I find it harder to breathe. Cause I need you here with me every day. Say you will.
this community and have lived here my whole life. I raised my family here and have watched others raise their families too. I know these lands, these people, our history, and our Unungan traditions. I want to continue to grow old here and live up my days in the place I call home with the people I love. As I get older, I know I need help with certain things I can't do on my own anymore. My family is a huge help, but they aren't always around or available for some of these chores. Aleutian Pribilof Islands Association helps support me through services they provide to elders like me, right here in my community. I was able to choose a chore worker to help me with my task I need to get done around the house and in my community. My chore worker helps me with things like getting chores done around the house, picking up groceries, or taking me to the post office. Through the APIA Chore Service Program, I can keep living in my current home and still receive the help I need to be independent.
For eligibility information, please reach out to the Aleutian Pribilof Islands Association Elder Care Services at 907-276-2700 or toll free at 1-800-478-2742.
And what we have here.
Everything hooks, everything works, you're a real good course, I'm a real good verse, freestyle unrehearsed, so clean, no curse, and when the song's domain, everything hurts, so I put it in reverse, go back to the scene where I seen you first.